Are you ready?
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the PODcast, your favorite podcast about nu metal. This is episode number 56, where for the very first time, we will be covering the band Stone Sour and their debut self-titled album, Stone Sour. I am John Cullen, and with me is a man who has left many a diary with cryptic entries in his wake. It's Brian Quinby.
Hey, I'm here. I'm ready to talk about Stone Sour. Really quite an album this is, I will tell you.
Is it ever? Is it something? Ever.
I mean, there is something on here that is maybe the funniest thing I've ever heard. There's a song, a thing on here.
I think this album has a chance to do the rare double. Funniest song we've ever heard and funniest piece of an article we've ever read.
Exactly. It's so good. It's something. This is an album that like I would never have listened to. And that is such a journey, a weird journey in my mind. I felt, because it was like I never had heard it, and then I was listening to it from the beginning, and I didn't hate it. Like when that first song comes on, you're like, wait a minute. I thought this stuff sucked. You know, this is different. And it was so weird. It was just such a journey. I wrote notes. You know, I always write my notes during it, because I'm listening to it while I'm out, like kind of fucking around and stuff. I'm reading articles. And it's just, you can watch me become less and less interested in the album as it goes, to the point where near the end, I didn't have notes for like four songs in a row, because I was like, what are we doing here? But, you know.
We'll get there.
Yeah. What's going on, John? How you doing?
Well, I was going to ask off the top, were you ever a diary guy? Because I did the sort of like diary quote. Well, I don't know. I mean, you laugh, but like you did grow up in a journaling / diary era.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have a box that has a bunch of papers. I never had a diary, but I would write stuff down on a piece of paper, shove it in a box, you know, let it go.
Sure.
But like a lot of it is it's literally a guy just saying exactly how he feels, which is a diary. That is a diary.
Yes.
But it is just like, it's not poetic or anything like that. And
a diary doesn't have to be poetic. Right. Often the diary is just like, here's what happened today.
And then after a while, it just turned into me saying, I hate my parents. And it was just constant, like, I know for a fact in that box, there is I had heard about Jim Carrey writing the, remember you heard about him writing that check to himself, like that $1 million check or whatever.
Classic,
and he was like, I'm going to be a millionaire in the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wrote myself a little contract that said, when I get older and rich, I'm going to buy my parents' house and then kick them out. And then buy the next place that they want and then kick them out of that too. It's in there. I know it's in there. And I remember writing it. I was so mad at him. And I'm going to tell you why. It was just this fucking plan.
I love that the first part of that is really, because people, you know, always say like, when I get rich, I'm buy my parents a house. But you're like, no, I'm going to buy their house and make them leave. Is very funny.
And it was because I was grounded and they wouldn't let me go to this girl's party. And I was like,
how old are you at this point?
16, maybe 15, maybe 17. It's really right in that little sweet spot of fuck you. Yeah. I hope you die, you piece of shit. Like, I really hated their guts. I probably have the box in this room in the thing in it, but it was like, I even signed at the bottom. Like, sign my name. I mean, and this is
like
the most,
a contract. Like, you're like, this is binding now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tried to write, there's so much weird stuff in there. I tried to write a song like Fucking Hostile by Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't good, and it didn't even come off like Fucking Hostile, which is kind of like a Pantera masterpiece. And I'm like, I'm gonna write one of those actually. You know, like, I think I can write one of the best songs this band ever made.
Yeah, like, for sure. Version. One of the best metal bands ever. One of their best songs. So, yeah, I could do that easily.
Well, and I also have little things in there about like what I wanted to do music wise. And I remember this is 19 years old and I'm talking about, you know, I want to make music. I want to make a heavy metal version of Usher. And the reason I wanted to do that is because Usher was really popular at the time, mm-hmm. and so was heavy metal. I literally just was like, I want to do the two things that are really popular right now.
What would
now.
That even look like, a heavy metal version of Usher?
I used to say it all the time, and in my mind, I would try to do it, and I couldn't do it. And then, like, you know, everybody's heard the Far version of Pony. Sure. I guess that's what I was trying to do.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? But in my mind, I'm not taking any kind of, I don't want anybody to think that I wrote anything close to Far's Pony. And in my head, I didn't hear that. I literally didn't hear any music in my head. I just knew there were two popular kinds of music at the time. If I could make both of them at the same time, I could be very rich and very famous. That's
and then
what
buy
I thought.
Your parents' house and kick them out of it.
Oh, yeah. Buy two houses, actually. They're going to have to take their third choice because I'm buying that motherfucker. Well, you'll be homeless.
Are they still in the house that you grew up in?
Nah. They moved. They've moved a few times because they've moved to Indiana for like 5 or 6 years or something that. And then they moved back and they live in my grandma's old house. And I wouldn't buy their house and kick them out now. You know, I.
You wouldn't as like a mature father.
No, if I had millions of dollars, I would not buy their house and kick them out.
Well, I do like the idea of that as well, that like you would buy their house and kick them out. And then I guess presumably you would live in the house. But if you're like rich, you wouldn't want to live in your parents' house in Groveport or whatever.
That house. Yeah. If you saw a picture of the house, I could probably do Google Street View of the house for you.
Yes.
You fucking see it. Hold on. I will. Because when you see it, you're like, you'll be like, why would anybody want that house?
But for you, it was the principle of it. It was making sure your parents were homeless. It wasn't the house itself.
That's exactly right, John. It was making sure that my parents were homeless so that I could get revenge on them for not letting me go to a party when I was grounded for having having like a 0.0 grade point after. So
now, right. Do you remember, like, did you want to go to this party? Because, like, was there a girl there that you
there
liked?
Was.
Okay, yeah, that's that. To me, it always at that age, all the anger really just comes down to a girl or a boy or whatever, you know, wherever this podcast finds you at. It comes down to having a crush on somebody.
Oh, yeah. I sent you the link to the house I grew up in.
Okay.
And there were seven of us.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, based on what Zillow estimates the price at, I think you could buy it now. If your parents were still in it, you could easily buy it and kick them out of there.
Not a good neighborhood. Not a great neighborhood.
So there was seven of you living in this?
Yes.
Holy shit.
My room was the middle one on the basement, in the basement, closest to the front door. So you go from the left and the bushes are in front of it. You go from the left, there was a room and then another room. That was my bedroom, was the second one.
Right.
It had a window. And thankfully, that whole area of the house was one room. This is why I sleep really cold, John. That area of the house was one room, right?
Yeah.
And then they put walls in so that my brother could have a room and I could have a room.
Right.
So that we didn't have to share a room because we were fighting all the time. And my brother is nasty. He's in there fucking doing whatever he was doing. He's just drawing Frank Thomas on the wall. It was very strange.
Like Frank Thomas, the baseball player?
Yeah. He literally drew Frank Thomas. on his wall and wrote socks.
Okay.
And now, never painted it. But
I'll say it does look like the house has a nice yard. Like that front yard yeah, looks we had nice.
There's a crappy above ground pool up there. And yeah, we weren't allowed really to play in the yard.
Okay.
So, I mean, every now and then they'd let us play in the yard, but really we had to play on the out in the middle of the street. And then once we turned like 19, we were like, well, we're hanging out in the middle of the street. I don't know where else to fucking go. And we hung out in the middle of the street in front of the house, and they would call the police on us like every 2 days because we were too loud.
Like you're talking about when you're like a kid, like you're like
no, eight. 19. Oh, I'm like 18, okay. 19 years old. So I don't have a curfew. I have to be in the house at any time. And I had been kicked out and moved out anyway. So I was coming to hang out in front of my house with my friends and we were too loud and they would call the cops. Cops would come and say, somebody called the cops. So we're like, we fucking know who called the cops. They call them every time. Never got arrested. It was just, but yeah, that house.
I mean, I can understand that. I'll be honest. If I lived and people were just like hanging out in the middle of the street at like 3 a.m, fucking drunk and high and smoking cigarettes constantly, I would probably also call the cops. You're acting like, I mean, I wouldn't now that I know more about what the police do, but you know what I mean? Like, I would not like that either. So I'm actually siding with your neighbors in this instance.
No, it wasn't my neighbors. It was my parents.
Oh.
They were who were calling the police. It was fucking crazy. They're calling police awesome. On us. And it was like...
So you were coming back to like hang out with your friends that still lived on the street.
Yeah. I had some friends that lived across the street.
Okay.
And they were really good friends, but you know, they... none of us were good. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So yeah, we were like hanging out in the street, being loud. We would get a big extension cord and a portable griddle and make grilled cheese sandwiches. Like in the middle of the street, we'd be out there fucking smoking weed. We'd be out there fucking calling restaurants and saying they fucked up our order so we could go and pick up. Cause we didn't have any fucking money. We were running over each other with the car. We were fucking throwing rocks at each other.
Just wait, whatever. Wait, you were running happen. Each other over with the car.
We thought it was funny to run over each other's feet with the car. So when the car would go to leave, you'd stick your foot in there and go bump, and you'd be like, ah, that's crazy. And we thought it was funny to punch each other in the stomach. And there was a light pole outside, and we always wanted to turn the light off because it's like it's this fucking street light that is so much light, and it's late at night, and we're trying to do illegal stuff.
Sure, yeah.
So we asked this guy to climb up and break the light because he could climb like poles and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
So he climbs up, he gets to the top, and we just start throwing rocks at him.
You and I
fuck
grew up
you. In, he's like, fuck you. And he's like yelling at us.
You and I grew up in very different worlds. I'll say that for sure. Yeah. When you were doing that, I was probably away at a curling tournament.
Damn, no, I didn't play any sports, man. I literally had zero. It's funny that like I do a job now that people also do as a hobby because like, I do the Legos now, obviously, but at that time I didn't have anything. Like my hobby would have had to have been doing drugs and throwing rocks at my friends and right, kicking each other in the nuts and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Getting in fights with people, like literally fights with people you hang out every day. And then you're playing spades or something and somebody cheats and you're fucking fighting them. And then an hour later, you're like, it's cool, man. You know, whatever. It was just a very like, it was a bunch of fucking dudes that were 19, 20, 18, maybe 17. And it was just a bunch of guys hanging out. It was a shitty neighborhood. It was boring. And none of us had money because none of us had jobs. So I get why. I think about it now and I'm like, I guess it would be very frustrating to have people in the street yelling all night, every night.
Yeah, it would be big time.
I live in the city now, though. Fucking people are loud all the time
here. Yeah, but that's different because they're probably like passing by. It's one thing if like people are loud is like they're walking by and they're loud. It's like, well, I don't love that, but whatever. They're going to be gone in a minute. It's not like these guys are outside cooking grilled cheese in the middle of the street and climbing the light standard.
I think they moved because I swear on my life, I think they moved because of that. Like your when parents. They moved out of that place, yeah, that house I'm showing you, when they moved out of there, I fully believe they moved out because there was this kid I hung out with, and his name was Nate, and his mom, he was like, I'm going to go hang out. So I lived by a school called Asbury Elementary.
Okay. That's where Bam Bam Bigelow was from?
Yes. Okay. And he goes, I'm going to go hang out with my friends. And she's like, where are you hanging out at? And he was like, it's over by Asbury. It's like a block. She was like, oh, that's a really bad neighborhood. And it wasn't. And I think it wasn't is because we were the people making it a bad neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? It's actually really great. I'm having a good time all the time. It's probably like how gangs feel like, oh, that's a really fucked up neighborhood. The gangs are like, well, it's actually great. It's actually really good for us. People give us money. We rob people all the time and we just get money and it's fucking cool.
Yeah, it really was. It was such an eye opening thing because it was like, what does she think goes on over there? And they're like, oh, you know. Cars get broken into, windows get busted out in the school, and people steal the PA system and fucking all this stuff, right? And it's like, that was all us. So tell her not to worry because you're not going to get in anything because we're the problem.
And, right. Yeah. But yeah. I will say, whoever owns the house now, they should really get that siding power washed. That's a tough look.
I don't think it's been power washed since I lived there because it looks exactly like it did when I lived there. It is.
So maybe it's like permanent. You couldn't even get it off with a power washer then because it's the front. The front is quite moldy.
Yeah, it's probably something we did.
Yeah.
Me and my friends did. But yeah. And my friends across the street, I wish you could see their house when it was before they moved out, because they were the ones, their dad would build onto his house. He was constantly doing add-ons to his house, but he wasn't getting any permits. None of it was to code.
And he was doing it himself.
Yes. And making his kids help. But like, he would just get like, he was always at the flea market and he was always buying stuff. None of it was like, he bought a bunch of windows for a house, right? Yeah. He buys like 12 windows or whatever. What are you going to do with fucking 12 windows? You know what I mean? Well, what he did was.
I love the idea of buying windows at the flea market.
He did. He bought a bunch of fucking windows.
I believe you. I'm saying it's fucking crazy.
He had a shed full of birds, John. Like, he just had a shed full of birds, pigeons, all different kinds of birds, like birds that aren't supposed to be captive. But anyway, he would build onto his house and he took those 12 windows and he lined them up on his deck and then put a roof on top of it and enclosed his deck and turned it into another room of the house and put a pool table in there. And it had to be the least up to code thing I've ever seen. There were no fucking walls on it. It was all windows. Yeah, he was so proud of himself. He got a pool
because he thought it was like a solarium, basically. He's like, yes. I built a solarium, but like using these windows that are not solarium windows.
Florida room. He's like, I got a Florida room.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very strange. The guy was very weird and like didn't have a backyard at all. Because
he had expanded the house out.
Yes. The house took up the entire backyard and the entire front yard. It was
big. Did he ever get like caught? Like, did bylaw ever come and give him shit, or did they just
You just don't really want to, you really don't want to fuck with Harry. I will say that. I think okay. They were just kind of like, you know what? He's going to live in that fucking thing. Right. But I
he's just going to do, Harry's going to do what he's going to do. We can't stop Harry.
His name is Harry, but we called him Eddie. And he, because okay. He's Greek and he had like the accent and it sounded like he said Eddie and he loved it. But yeah. Okay. You just didn't fuck with the guy, man. And I think, you know. I think if he was around now doing what he was doing, I think code enforcement would definitely sort of come down on him. But back then, I think like a person could have a reputation and everybody just kind of leaves them alone and let them do what they're going to do. You know what I mean? And I wish that was still like that now, but it is certainly not. So.
No. Wow. I love when we just stumble into a slice of life from your childhood that we had previously not metal. Explored.
I was listening to tons of new metal outside when the cops would come at 3 a.m.
Oh, you had music playing as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't hang out without music, John.
All right. So now tunes. It's making even more sense that the cops got calls. Like you're adding on. You're like, yeah, we also we would just set off firecrackers constantly.
Yes, we did do that a lot too.
Yeah. Okay.
We did.
Like, why were people calling fire? The cops? We were doing all of these impossibly noisy things in the middle of the street at 3 a.m.
Who we're lighting each other on fire. There was this period where we thought it was cool to light each other on fire, and somebody would just be standing.
But how? Like with somebody lighter just be fluid standing and there.
No, you get behind them and light their shirt on fire while they're standing there.
Like how would the shirt ignite?
You just fucking stand. It would be so. It would be standing behind a person for a few minutes, not knowing okay. that you're. They know you're there, but they don't know what you're doing, and they'd be in a conversation, and you'd just be standing there with the lighter on their shirt, and you know it wouldn't go up in flames or anything, but yes, we used to light each other on fire quite often. We thought that was like the funniest fucking thing. We thought lighting each other on fire was funny. We also thought kicking each other in the back of the knees was like impossibly hilarious. Like you couldn't just stand anywhere because somebody would run up behind you and kick you in the back of the knees, and that hurts.
It hurts, and you fold.
It sucks. That's how I am with the stomach punches too. Like now I know how to like sort of flex it. But I was thinking about this recently, man. Getting punched in the stomach when you're not ready is almost as bad as getting kicked in the balls, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's a similar kind of like deep-seated, queasy feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I hate getting hit in the balls. That fucking sucks.
I like that you say that like you're the only guy. Hey. I actually hate getting hit in the balls.
I'm doing an episode about guys that hate getting hit in the balls. Yeah. That's crazy.
r/ I hate getting hit in the balls.
We got to do this album, John. Yeah,
let's talk about this album. Yeah, so we are covering Stone Sour's debut album, which is self-titled Stone Sour. The band is named after a cocktail at a local bar that they all seem to hate.
They said it was a cocktail, but I thought it was, wasn't it? Is it like an actual cocktail that you can get at any bar? Or
I don't think so. One? I think it's like a local, like at a local bar, they had a Stone Sour. And the guy, there's an interview here with Sean Economaki, who was in the band, and he was talking about how he would never drink it. He said it sounds gross. And I mean, obviously I don't drink, but the question was, I don't want to skip ahead to the interviews, but this is from a Metal Rage interview in 2006 with Sean Economaki. And the guy asks, have you ever drank that Amaretto Stone Sour? And Sean says, yes, it's horrible. It's god awful. Do not drink one. It's like Amaretto, orange juice, and whiskey. And it sucks. It sucks. But it was Stone Sour or Ocean Green. That was the other cocktail that I guess they were deciding on their band name. Because originally their band name was Super Ego. And then they were also called Closure before deciding on Stone Sour.
Several bad names.
Several, actually. Yeah, many bad names. But in any case, they actually formed in 1992. Corey Taylor was in the band from the beginning with Joel Ekman and Sean Economaki. Jim Root, the guitarist from Slipknot, had joined the band in 1995. So they were together from 1992 to 1997, sort of just like a local Des Moines, Iowa band. They never released an album. And then once Slipknot started, they went on hiatus because Corey and Jim joined Slipknot. And it sounds like it was kind of like a sex art situation where the guys from LAPD plucked Jonathan Davis from Sex Art. It kind of sounds like Clown was sort of putting together Slipknot in Iowa and had seen Stone Sour. I guess at the time they were called Super Ego or whatever. And really liked Corey's singing and really liked Jim's guitar playing and recruited them for Slipknot. So Stone Sour went on hiatus. And like I said, they hadn't released any albums. So their debut album ends up coming out in 2002 on a break from Slipknot after Iowa comes out. It came out on August 27th, 2002, and it was recorded in Iowa at Catamount Studios in Cedar Falls. It came out on Roadrunner Records, and it was produced by Tom Tatman, which is a hilarious producer name, and the band Stone Sour. It was praised for showing a diversity in Taylor's vocals, which was not presented in Slipknot's early albums. It's been certified gold in the United States, and two singles, Get Inside and Inhale, received nominations for Best Metal Performance at the Grammys in consecutive years. The album did fairly well on the charts. It peaked at number 46 on the US Billboard 200, number 41 on the UK albums chart. It also charted in France, Germany, Japan, Scotland, and Canada. And the singles did fairly well also. Get Inside was the first single. It did not chart. But then Bother, the second single, made it all the way up to number 2 on the mainstream rock tracks chart, number 4 on the alternative airplay chart, and it actually made the Billboard Hot 100 at number 56. It also peaked at number 2 on the UK rock and metal charts and was certified gold as a single in both the United States and Canada. And then the third single, Inhale, peaked at number 18 on the mainstream rock tracks chart and number 63 on the UK singles charts. So, you know, fairly well-performing album. Obviously, Bother was helped by being on the Spider-Man soundtrack, but was, yeah, pretty massive album for these guys. They toured the United States in support of the album with Chevelle and Cinch. They also did a tour with Saliva, a tour with Power Man 5000, and they linked up with Joey Jordison's other band, Murder Dolls, for a tour as well. And then the last thing, Brian, before we get into Stone Sour, I just wanted to see if you could guess one of our favorite games to play on the show. Those 2 years, Stone Sour were nominated for the Best Metal Performance Grammy, 2003 and 2004. Can you guess which songs won the Grammys in those years? And I will say they're both very big songs by very big bands.
So I don't know if I know what came out those 2 years, because that's a, you said 2003, 2004?
Correct, yeah.
I was so fucking out on metal at that, because that's when Gwen was born in 2004, and I can really draw the line of like, yeah, at that time I was listening to like Black Sabbath, which, is that one of the bands?
No. But it is a very huge metal band, and we have covered them on the show.
Shit. So it would have to be somebody, it would have to be like a, like Korn?
Yeah.
Was Korn there?
And Korn won in 2003, Here to Stay won.
Oof. Okay.
And then the other nominees were POD's Portrait, Slipknot's My Plague, Stone Sour's Get Inside, and Rob Zombie's Never Gonna Stop, the Red Red Croovy.
That should have won. Never gonna stop, man. Never gonna stop. That should have won.
And then in 2004, you're still missing even bigger band than Korn, and we have covered them on the show.
Fuck, because I can't. I don't want to cheat and bring up what we've
Think about covered. Like a metal band that's won a lot of Grammys. What album did they come out with in 2004 that we covered on the show?
There's no way.
The single is the same name as the album.
Shit.
People are yelling at their radios right now.
I know they are. I'm going to look at what we've covered, which I think is cheating, maybe.
No, it's fine. You can look. You'll get it. As soon as you start looking, you'll be like, oh, that makes sense.
All right. So I'm thinking 2004 Metallica, Saint Anger.
You got it. Yep.
Yeah.
That Saint Anger so somehow bad. Won the Best Metal Performance Grammy. The nominees were Korn's Did My Time, Marilyn Manson's Mob Scene, Spine Shank were nominated, which is crazy, for Smothered, and then Stone Sour, Inhale.
That shit was fucked up back then, man. All that stuff sucked. But again, I was so fully out that I was like, I was like getting into the Cars at that time. Okay, and like, yeah. I was just getting into a lot of stuff that what, like all the stuff I'd missed because I was very close-minded.
Right.
And I had just gotten into all that stuff. And the only reason I know the demarcation is, like I said, Gwen was born in 2004. So well, I know what I was listening to.
It's also
at that period of time.
It's also such a Grammy thing that the Stone Sour album comes out in 2002, and then they get nominated in 2003 and 2004 for songs that are on the same album. Like, it's so stupid.
Do they do albums or so?
No, it's just songs for metal performance. They don't do albums. They do best rock album, but metal bands never get nominated for that, or hard rock bands never get nominated for that.
Can I say also that there are two versions of the Stone Sour drink?
Okay.
And one of them has like almost no alcohol in it, and that's the one that they're talking about. But it looks like somebody went back and made a Stone Sour, like a modern one.
Okay.
And I don't drink, but Katie does, and I think it says 1.5 ounces of wild turkey, orange juice, lemon juice, simple syrup, cherry, and an orange half wheel. That's probably very good for people.
Yeah, that sounds okay.
People that drink would like truly enjoy. But I mean, it seems like, because I was while you were getting us ready, it said like, what did it say? It said like it's a drink from 1917, and it was real popular in the 70s. So I wonder if they were so familiar with it because amaretto is a booze that your parents wouldn't notice when you steal it.
Right. Because they have it, but it sucks. So, because it's like almond flavored, right? So like almond and orange juice sounds fucking terrible.
It is. And the thing says it sucks, but then I knew amaretto was like a really low alcohol drink. Like in Ohio, a certain proof can only be bought at a liquor store, right? So you can buy vodka at the grocery store, but it's diluted so that it doesn't hit a certain proof. And amaretto is one you can buy just at the grocery store. Like you can just go in and grab it off the shelf because it doesn't have very much alcohol in it. So it reads as like a drink that either was super cheap and that's what was getting them drunk, but it also reads like a nasty drink. So I did it. I had to look it up because I didn't even, I don't know why I didn't think that was what I, this band has such a weird aesthetic.
It is a weird, it's a weird band for sure.
It's not like he's like, oh, you know, I'm having a lot of fun doing this. I'm the new fun Corey Taylor, you know, I'm not punching myself in the head and stuff like that. But then as you go through the album, it's like, this doesn't sound fun to me. This sounds miserable. And I'm fine with that. You know what I mean? That's generally what you're looking for when you listen to nu metal is kind of bummed out. And this felt like that. In a way, like it didn't feel like a full vision. It kind of felt like, I was talking to my brother yesterday was Easter. I'm talking to my brother about Korn, and I was saying like, you know, he really liked, he's been listening to the first album When He Runs.
Okay.
Yeah. Self-titled. And he was like, it's so different from Life is Peachy and, you know, the other Follow the Leader. And I was like, you know what the best Korn album is Issues. It's the most fully realized version of what they do. It's a cohesive album where everything fits and there's no like really terrible songs on it. This album is sort of the opposite of that, where almost nothing fits.
Yeah.
Really. And it just sounds like a bunch of songs that Slipknot thought that Slipknot wouldn't do. That's really what it sounds like to me. Because I don't see this, and maybe their later albums had it, but I honestly truly have no idea what kind of what they were doing. And it makes for a really uneven listening experience where like sometimes you're like, oh shit, I didn't know. Like, so, okay. Song number one, Get Inside. That first comes on. You're like, okay, maybe I can do this. You know, I don't know right. if that's how you felt, but as soon as that song starts, I'm like, this is fucking good. Maybe this album is like really good. And because he's doing the Slipknot rap voice, it's heavy. It's good. And it's got a solo, which is like, you know, I'm in or out on that. It doesn't, but like, that is not the whole album, because then you get, once you're like halfway through it, all my notes are, this song is horrible. This sucks. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you, because we didn't really talk about this, and that's usually how we lead off, is like, were you listening to Stone Sour at all at the time? Like in 2002, are you aware? Because I know for me, like this felt like a big deal. You know, like I was very into Slipknot at the time. I really liked the self-titled. I liked Iowa. I liked Bother, because obviously I'm like, you know, a wimp or whatever. Like when Bother came out on the Spider-Man soundtrack, that was big for me. Like I was just like, whoa, the guy from Slipknot is doing this like emotional song. Like this is this ballad, like this fucking rocks. Like I had that on mixtapes. I fucking loved Bother. Like that was a huge song for me. So, and I just feel like it felt like a big deal. Like it felt like, wow, Corey Taylor is unmasking. He's singing. He's actually a good singer. Kind of felt like T-Pain doing the Tiny Desk concert where everybody was like, whoa, he can actually sing. And not that, I mean, Corey's a great vocalist in Slipknot. And it was obvious Corey could sing even from being in Slipknot. But, you know, it's just that other level where I remember it being a big deal and feeling like a big deal that Slipknot had this kind of air of mystery around them. And then they, you know, Corey and Jim were kind of giving up that air of mystery in exchange for, you know, doing this project and maybe giving this project some cachet. So it felt to me like it would have been an album that maybe would have crossed your, even though you're out at this time, you did like Slipknot. Like it feels like it would have been something that you would have been aware of, but you weren't really following even still.
I think I was reading the PRP still.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to find something. There was a story. So here's what I've always felt that. I've always felt this. That he got tired of. Like, imagine you're in one of the biggest metal bands of all time and nobody fucking knows who you are. And yeah. It also opens up another thing where people can say they are you.
And yes, people will and they were. People I know. Were doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people do that with Kid Rock. And it's like, we all know what fucking Kid Rock looks like, but people were doing, there was a guy in Myrtle Beach, saying he was Kid Rock and going to all the bars and getting free drinks because he was Kid Rock. You know what I mean? It's weird because I've said this a million times. Like when we were in LA, my daughter was like, you think we'll see any famous people? And I was like, no. And what I really meant was I wouldn't recognize a famous, I wouldn't recognize fucking Ben Affleck if he walked by me. You know what I mean? Because I'm not looking at everybody else. I'm not really paying attention to everybody else. And, you know, I don't think I'd be able to see. Also, I don't care to see a famous guy on the street. I don't exactly know what that would be. But I do think that, I guess, like, I like the way things are for me, where I get to do what I want to do, but nobody knows who I am, except for people that yell my name when I'm walking down the street, which is always very cool. You know, I actually had a guy, John, I had a guy go, "Murder Brian." And I was like, yeah. And so he said Brian. He didn't
say in LA.
This is in Columbus.
Okay. Yeah.
He didn't even say "Murder Brian." He said Brian. And I turned around and I was like, oh my God, I don't know this guy.
Right.
But I thought that I was supposed to know him. And I think,
oh, like you were having that, like, oh, I've met this guy before, but I can't remember who he is kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
I was so fucking nervous, dude. And the guy's like, oh no, you don't know me. And I shook his hand and turned around and walked away. But I was so fucking nervous.
Right.
About that. And I think, like, I think that Corey not being able to capitalize on his fame has to suck. You know what I mean? Like, it has to, because Corey could go to a bar now and get drinks for free.
Totally.
Yeah. Everybody would, he's the center of attention at the bar, which, you know, guys like Corey Taylor like to be. I know that they would say they don't, but I'm talking to my wife yesterday about, I don't like going to bars unless I'm on stage and everybody's paying attention to me and laughing at me. That's like was how I explained it. And I think Corey was just bummed out because, you know, and Stone Sour seems like a band, honestly, that I don't know if they did, but had the potential to outsell Slipknot.
Yeah, they definitely did not.
But they definitely, if you were thinking about doing this.
Yes, right? For sure. Where you're doing sort of like a less heavy version of Slipknot.
Yes. And you would kind of be like, oh, maybe this could outsell Slipknot. There's fewer people in this band. Maybe I could bring home more money doing Stone Sour.
Yeah.
And that's how I always felt. I always felt this was like, honestly, smart for him to take the mask off. You know, I think the other guys refusing to do it is so weird. But
sorry to interrupt, but just to give you some context, the next album after this is called Come Whatever May. And it sold, it went platinum.
Okay.
So that's their best seller, is the one right after this one. It went platinum, and it also peaked at like very high. It peaked at number 4 on the Billboard 200, number 1 on the top rock albums chart, number 6 in Canada, peaked in a ton of, or like made the charts in a ton of countries, ended the year on the US Billboard 200 at 189. But then the third album, Audio Secrecy, which came out in 2010, has not even gone gold. So they had a moment, you know, with Come Whatever May, where they were, you know, never bigger than Slipknot. I think Slipknot self-titled is at least multi-time platinum by now. I hear what you're saying. Like they were, there was definitely a world where that could have potentially happened, I think.
Yeah. I think I'm surprised it didn't really. I would assume that there are a lot of Stone, like you don't think about, like there are probably a lot of Stone Sour fans that don't even like Slipknot. And then there are Slipknot fans that don't even like. So listen, we've talked about this with Slipknot many times. If I'm in a band with 9 people, I'm trying to make some money.
Yes, at some definitely.
So 100%. Even if you believe in yourself and you believe that you can make something that people will buy, I would do it. I mean, I don't personally like the album, but I can see why somebody might, you know. I do have to say, I when you ask if I have any experience with them, I have seen them live in 2017.
Oh, really?
Korn. Yeah, they were opening for Korn.
Oh, gotcha.
And okay. I saw them, but I didn't know any of the songs. And After listening to this album, I think I just knew the one song, Bother.
Right.
And wow. That's why I don't, that's why I think, because I have in my mind that I hate Stone Sour.
Right.
But I also have never listened to them. And I was like, why would I hate this band? Because I never listened to it, but I just immediately, when I hear it, I'm like, oh, they suck.
Well, Bother was very ubiquitous, right? Because of the Spider-Man soundtrack and just, yeah, the idea of Corey doing a song like that. Also, just for further reference, Slipknot, self-titled album, double platinum, Iowa, Volume 3, The Subliminal Verses, and All Hope Is Gone are all platinum. And then 0.5, The Gray Chapter, is gold.
And so, these are, what was the 2010 one? Was that...
That was the 0.5, The Gray Chapter, I think.
And what did that...
And that, what did that, that went, that went gold.
Okay, so yeah. I think like you can reasonably...
Or no, sorry, that was 2014. So All Hope Is Gone is 2008. That goes platinum. 2014 is 0.5, The Gray Chapter. That goes gold. Hmm. And then We Are Not Your Kind is 2019. Has not gone gold yet. And yeah. Same thing with The End So Far. Which came out in 2022.
It's so hard to figure out when albums sales stopped necessarily meaning anything.
Yeah.
Like 2010 feels like the time when we're, I feel like, well, no, because I didn't have Spotify until.
Yeah. 2014, the album still goes gold. So,
okay. Yeah.
That's but a big album, it basically then. Slipknot is bigger than Stone Sour and by almost any metric, but
and better. I mean, the other metric is they're better.
It's than funny Stone to Sour. Me, like listening to this. So I think I have heard Get Inside before, or Come Inside, Get Inside, whatever the hell fuck yeah. That's called. Come Inside,
wow. Yeah, or Come Inside, not taking the
get inside. But it's weird because I do remember liking Bother so much. And then I also remember like not following up on this. Like, I think what I did was, you know, like you having the idea of, oh, Stone Sour sucks. Like I had that as well, but it was like, not sucks, but I just thought like, I don't need a whole album of ballads from the Slipknot guy. Like, I think I had it in my mind that the whole album was just like, wimpy ballads
such
from
a Slipknot funny
guy, and it's not like that at all, but no. Totally Bother being the big hit off of it made you think that. I think,
yeah, it might have been a mistake. Well, I was gonna say it might have been a mistake to release that, but then I don't think the album's as big as it is.
No, definitely
without not. Bother, but it is not. Bother is not indicative of what you're getting when you buy this album. And as I said, it's a lot heavier than I thought it was.
Yeah, me too. Way
for
heavier.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not expect, like I said, that first song, I really didn't expect that, that riff at the very beginning and him doing the Slipknot rap guy voice. And that's why I think another thing that you got to talk about when you're talking about the Stone Sour album, and it's not something we even talk at, I mean, we do sometimes, but the lyrics on this are, it's like a totally different thing than Slipknot. And that's why it made me feel like, like butt rock, like just boring rock music. And like, these are songs that Slipknot rejected because the lyrics, I think, there's a lot more of him sort of trying to be funny.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He definitely like, there's a thinks lot more he's funny. We learned that in the interviews. Like, he thinks he's a funny dude.
Oh,
and he talks about, like, even live. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of, like, having fun with the audience. I'm cracking jokes. It's way different than a Slipknot show where I can't really do any of that stuff. And it's like, oh, were we asking for that? Were we like, I hope the Slipknot guy is cutting jokes when I go see Stone Sour. It
feels I know. And this, I guess you can't really, because there's nine other guys. But I think if you're going to crack jokes, Slipknot would be. But they take that so fucking seriously.
Yeah, Slipknot is so serious. Yeah.
That's why. That's a third reason. You know, I got two reasons. He wanted to be famous. He wanted to take the mask off, which makes sense. He wanted to be like gregarious and stuff like that. And he wanted to be a funny guy. He thought he was a funny guy. He had a lot to offer the world in the way of fun. And he still does that.
Oh, Corey MF Taylor.
Yeah. I was going to put that, like, if I almost put that in the next poll,
because I could not handle that next month after doing Stone Sour,
because this album was such a fucking weird thing that I was like, is that one? Like, what is that one? You know what I mean? Like, cause I've heard,
it's gotta be like song. This kind of, it's like, yeah, to me, this album really feels, and you kind of touched on this like 20 minutes ago, but this album really feels like Corey feeling like his voice isn't heard in Slipknot. Yeah. because you're like, you listen to this, like my first thought listening to this the first time I listened through, and this one I actually listened to three times because I was trying to get a handle on it. Like, it's a very confusing record it's not far enough removed from Slipknot's music, in my opinion. Like, usually when you see side projects from bands, they're much different, or maybe not so much different. Like, you can draw a straight line from Deftones to Crosses or Deftones to Team Sleep, but it's like clearly different. It's like all, you know, it's like very electronically motivated, or in Team Sleep's case, it's a lot more like shoegazy than Deftones are. Like, so you go, okay, I get why Chino wanted to do a different thing, and I can see why the band wouldn't want to do that. With Stone Sour, it kind of just feels like Corey thought to himself, I want to write the songs, and the guys in Slipknot aren't letting me write the songs, so I gotta fucking make my own band. But then he makes his own band, and it just kind of sounds like a low rate Slipknot. Like, it's very odd. I was pointing, like, one quote really got me, and he's being honest. This was actually from 2023, so this is Corey talking about his second solo album, Corey MF2. But this is from Metal Hammer, and Corey was talking about Stone Sour, you know, reflecting on Stone Sour. And he says, speaking about resurrecting Stone Sour in 2002 while on a break from Slipknot, Taylor admits it was a very selfish thing. Quote, I knew at the time I didn't write music as good as the guys in Slipknot. I wasn't confident in my abilities, and I contributed that much, makes a tiny space between his thumb and index finger, he tells Metal Hammer. Reforming Stone Sour meant I got better as a songwriter and was able to contribute music to Slipknot, but it came from a purely selfish place of just wanting to feel like I could do it. And that is kind of exactly what this album feels like. It feels like Corey brought some of these riffs and some of these lyrics to Slipknot, and Clown was like, fuck you, no. And then he was like, fine, I'll just get my band from 1997 back together, make an album, and I'll put out a little wimpy ballad, and we'll see. I'll get on the Spider-Man soundtrack, and we'll see who can sell more copies, Clown. Fuck you, too.
Yeah, them Murder Dolls. I think definitely Stone Sour did better than the Murder Dolls.
Oh, most definitely, yes.
Well, that's all.
But it's a lead singer, right? It's not. People aren't always like, oh, I really want to follow the drummer of my favorite band to his new project. No like offense,
Methods of Mayhem,
to Joey, one of the best ever. But yes,
Methods of Mayhem. I can tell you, I wanted to do this because first of all, Get Inside, I liked. Orchids, I liked.
Yep.
Cold Reader, I did not expect the Incubus style turntables. Like, I didn't expect the turntables at all.
Yes.
And I thought that was really strange, because that is a thing that could separate you from Slipknot in a way. Like, anytime you use the turntables, it's just gonna remind people of like the heavy parts of Slipknot songs. Yeah. So I don't understand why they did it, why they did the scratching on the turntables, but they had decided to do it. But what I'm saying is, so I get the blotter and I'm listening to, I like this song. I'm taking notes. I'm like, I'm right. This is pretty good. And then he starts doing, I want to see you in my nothingness, and singing it like, I want, or something like that. And I was like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And then just as the album went, is like things got more and more corny. It was either corny or generic.
And not corny sounding like corn. Corny, like cheesy.
Yeah, for real. It does. It comes off like the lyrics are just, I mean, I don't know that when I listen to this and I look at the lyrics, that I think these lyrics are so different from Slipknot lyrics a lot of times. And the parts where they're different from Slipknot lyrics are the parts that suck. So, like, I don't know how you would be able to, I don't know how they could work all that out with Slipknot. And it just feels like, as you said, Slipknot didn't like a lot of his lyrics because they're corny. And they also didn't want him fucking around on stage, like joking around and stuff like that, which is, again, crazy. They are nine guys in masks. You're not fucking serious. And you're also not a bunch of serious ass kickers. I got that vibe off. The vibe off him that I get now is that, like, he thinks he's the toughest fucking ass kicker to ever live. You know what I mean? Like, you read the stories and the stuff like that. It's like, this guy, like, these songs aren't ass kicker songs.
I guess no. A lot of
them. And I really didn't like, what is it? Where is it at? Bother. I really hated that song.
Yeah. And that's not a Brian jam.
And in 2002, I probably would have hated it a lot more.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I had listened to this in 2002 when it comes out, I think there would have been songs that I liked pieces of. And that's why it's a hard album to review, because a lot of these songs have pieces that I like a lot, but then it becomes a Stone Sour song and I don't like those pieces. Those are the pieces I don't like.
Yeah. I was the same as you. Like, I think the first three songs are all very good. Although it is funny to me, I don't know if you found this, but I feel like the riff from Orchids and Cold Reader is very similar. Like when Orchids ends and Cold Reader begins, it kind of feels like the same, like it's a 6 minute song. Like, you don't even necessarily know you're onto a new song. And then Cold Reader has those sort of like Latin sort of inspired drums. Like, it switches to almost like a Latin tempo. And that's the only thing that separates it from Orchids. Like, the opening riff sounds very similar to me. And then I agree with you. Like, I think there's some fine, like, you know, as I was listening to it, I was sort of like, oh, you know, I would listen. I'd be like, oh, that's fine. This is fine. You know, whatever. I never like actively thought the album was bad. I just thought, okay, this is diminishing returns as it goes along. I was never offended. It was never like a Crazy Town situation where it was like actively heinous to listen to. It just felt like, the more you listen to it, the more you're like, why did this even exist? Because it's so Slipknot adjacent. It's not super interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I liked it more than you, I would say. Like, I was surprised I enjoyed it when it was on, but it definitely begins to flag as the record goes on, for sure.
You know what it turns into? Is WWE music. I it really, like, a lot of this stuff. But what's the song I wrote it down for? Because I think they choose. My only note is Monday Night Raw ass song. Like, so I just Googled it, and they haven't used much Stone Sour. They've used a lot of Corey Taylor, but no, he's been on NXT too. So he has. Baron Corbin gets involved with Corey Taylor, lead singer of Slipknot and Stone Sour, at NXT Aftershock. But I think, like, that's what, like, it sounds like also, because you can't say that this doesn't have a more commercial vibe than Slipknot. That would just be you burying your head in the sand. This is something written for that, you know. Did you know Corey Taylor was in the 2002 version of Rollerball?
No.
Yeah, I have famouspeople.com. So this the famouspeople.com up.
Yeah.
With Corey
Classic
Taylor.
Classic website.
I would love to read you this, John.
Please, yes.
Corey Todd Taylor, popularly known as the Boogie Knight and the Grim Chopper, is an American singer, songwriter, musician, actor,
and author. Is he popularly known as those things? Because I feel like I know more about Slipknot than most of the population, and I've never heard him called those things. Or is that his character name in the movie?
No, he's known as the Boogie Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, and the Grim Chopper. And also okay. His nickname is also the Great Big Mouth.
Nope.
So
none of that's
his nickname. Oh, these are his nicknames we've all known sure. about.
These are nicknames forever. That Corey made for himself and submitted to famouspeople.com.
But yeah, it says he's in a few movies. I don't know if I, but In Search of Darkness, which is something I've actually seen. It's a documentary about horror movies, and it is, I know he's in it. But then Fear Clinic, Officer Down, and Rollerball. The only one I've heard of is Rollerball.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Not a good move. Not the 2002 version, not a great movie.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's a remake, right?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's what's that? It's got that Chris Klein, I think, in it.
Oh, Chris Klein. Wow. Was that like yeah. one of his last roles before he fell off?
It's when he was performing, man. It's when he was out there. But yeah, I think this is the most kind of, this to me is the most kind of really going for something commercial album we've ever done on here. I haven't seen something, I'm not going to call it cynical because I understand why he's doing it.
Yeah,
I totally understand. But I think that like it is half songs. Like if a lot of these songs were cut in half, it would be my shit. I would love it. But they're not. And they all go into like a guitar solo, which I don't want to hear when I'm listening to nu metal, which maybe he wasn't saying he was nu metal or whatever. But I hate guitar solos in this kind of music because none of them are that good at the guitar to be doing guitar solos. And I just think like when he decides he's going to show that he can sing, that's the parts I don't like.
Sure. Well, I think you're right. Like it's weird because it's not cynical in a sense where he's creating this music to be famous because he's already famous.
Yeah.
But he himself is not famous. Number nine or whatever mm-hmm. the fuck is. He's number four, I think.
He's nine.
Number eight.
I thought he was number nine. I'm going to look that up.
I think he's
it's
four.
Not
in, or eight.
It's not on the famouspeople.com. Didn't have the
didn't
number.
Have his Slipknot number. No, okay.
It's mostly about Stone Sour.
Yeah, it's really a much weird. More you famous band. Yeah. So, you know, I think when we say cynical, we think of that. It's like he doesn't care about the music and he's just trying to get famous or get a record deal or get rich, whatever. But I will say this does, it's not cynical is not the right word, but it's definitely done to be commercially successful because he wants to prove he can do it. And he feels like he's not a part of Slipknot's success, even though he's the lead singer. He feels like he's like a hired gun in Slipknot and he's not actually a guy. So he wants to prove he can do it on his own. And it's clear that he's like fighting with Slipknot at the time that they record this. And so it's also like, it's not necessarily cynical, but it is an attempt to gain commercial success to say to the guys in Slipknot, like, I can do this myself. Fuck you. Which is kind of I don't think we've really seen too many records, and we probably won't see too many records on this show where that's sort of the explicit intent. Like his intent is clearly to prove something and in a somewhat cynical way, but not, yeah, it's not all the way to just like doing it for the sake of doing it.
It definitely, well, I actually went to his Wikipedia. He was number eight, and they have a few other nicknames too. Great Big Mouth, Todd Tigger, the Boogie Knight, and Neck are some more of his.
No one calls him that though. No one calls it. No one, like, The Slipknot guys aren't sitting around calling him Boogie.
Hey,
like, short for Boogie Knight, or like it's not happening.
Todd Tigger's in the house.
Yeah, be careful who you say that around.
I know that is a hard one to say.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. But yeah, it is definitely like, also, I think, you know, maybe I'm reading into it wrong, but he wanted this to be bigger. This was leverage in a way too. I do feel like Stone Sour was leverage in the group, because like they, I think, felt like the way I read it, that it was maybe believed that Corey could be replaced in Slipknot, and honestly probably could, and nobody would really know if you found somebody that could do his voice and stuff like that, obviously. But like, I think the idea was that like they could replace him anytime, until he took the mask off, he did this thing that was big that could sustain him, and then now he can go back to Slipknot when it's time to go back. And he's got more leverage than the other guys. He could just do Stone Sour for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? And I wonder if that was a part of it, because he seems, in 2002, when this album comes out, he seems very, he seems to really not like Slipknot.
They all talk about like hating recording Iowa. Like, I remember when we covered that album, like it just sounds like it was absolute hell. You know, even on their Wikipedia for Slipknot, it says that Slipknot entered the studio in 2001 to begin recording new material. This period in the band's career became known as one of their worst. Jordison recalled, "That's where we got into a war. Other factors, including vocalist Corey Taylor's alcoholism, other members' drug addictions, and management issues, affected relations in the band. Recording Iowa was fucking hell," recalled Sean Crahan. "I wanted to kill myself. There was drugs, bitches, rock and roll, all that shit. People expected so much of us then. People equals shit was our way of saying fuck off and leave us alone." Corey says, "There was nothing happy about Iowa. All of a sudden, we were these metal stars and we weren't really planning for it. We all got caught up in the lifestyle and the problems that come with that." And then Jim Root says that like him and Mick Thompson fought during a Guitar magazine interview in November 2001, because Jim Root wasn't super involved in the self-titled album. So it says, "It was so exciting as well as scary to be a part of this whole huge process," adding, "There was a lot of pressure from fellow guitarist Mick Thompson to perform well." And I remember when we covered Iowa, we found out Mick Thompson is a absolute loser. And so I wonder if that was part of it too, where like Jim Root was also saying like, "You know what? I would love to write a guitar part where Mick Thompson and Paul Gray and Joey Jordison aren't breathing down my neck." And because it sounds like from that Wikipedia page, Paul Gray and Joey Jordison do a lot of the writing for Slipknot, which makes sense that, you know, Corey and Jim would feel, you know, a lack of ownership over it, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think like them very publicly fighting is one of those things that you see it more in like comedy, I think, than you do music, where like two people will talk shit about each other without like kind of saying saying it. You know what I mean? So it's like, right, so much of this is him saying like through the press, like, "I'm sick of your shit, clown. And, I don't want to work with you. You're too much of a pain in the ass. We're not having conversations and stuff like that." But which is also a very 2002. It's a very 2002 way to deal with it. We talked about this last month, that like pre the internet really being this thing that everybody's on, a lot of these guys didn't understand that like they thought it was like a place where a few people are at, that their biggest fans are at, and that like, so they could use it to, I don't know, like pick on people and stuff like that, like talk shit about each other. But that stopped after, you know, after a while. Like, they all started to figure it out, but it definitely feels like, that's why I keep saying leverage, that this seems like leverage, because it really seems like these guys really didn't like each other at this time, and that they were publicly fighting. But Corey had a bigger band than Murder Dolls, you know?
Yeah. Is that, oh yeah, for sure.
Like, he was just in a bigger band, and like, had, he never had to come back.
And well, it's also like, you know, the reality is, whether Corey was writing any or not a lot of the Slipknot stuff or whatever, he's the lead singer. Like, the lead singer is always going to have cachet. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what band you're in. Most of the time, people are going to be more interested in whatever the lead singer is doing than anyone else.
Sure.
People aren't reading liner notes and going, oh, Corey Taylor didn't write the lyrics to a lot of these songs. That's crazy. Maybe I don't like him that much. Like, people don't care about that.
You don't think, though, that if Slipknot just replaced him, that...
I'm not saying he's not replaceable. I think
he's more replaceable than most lead singers, I would say.
Yeah, I guess I could get there. I guess I could understand that. But I just think... But I'm just saying, like, let's say he leaves Slipknot, and let's say Paul Gray leaves Slipknot, and they both start side projects. Which side project is going to get more attention? It's going to be Corey Taylor's. That's all I'm saying.
Like, I think outside of Slipknot, you're right, but in Slipknot, I don't think anybody has any real power in that band. I think anybody could leave. I don't think anybody would fucking care.
It's a 9-person band for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
Joey is so good that I feel like Joey is probably the second most important member of that band. And I mean, obviously he's not in the band anymore. But yeah, to me, I think if you lose Joey, you lose a bit of Slipknot, and obviously you lose Corey. Anytime you lose a vocalist, it's going to feel different, even if they don't feel like, you know, a shining exemplar in the genre necessarily. But yeah, to me, those are the two most important in Slipknot, but you're right. When you have a band with 9 guys, you can lose a guy.
Mm-hmm. Any of them. It just wouldn't even matter. So we haven't done this yet, and it's time to do it before we get to the articles, obviously.
Yes.
There is a song on this album. Now, many are saying, hey, you know what song's like really funny? It's Roadhogs. And I listened to that song, and it's intended to be funny. Now, there is a thing on here.
Yeah, calling it a song is maybe maybe overstating it.
It's a poem.
It's a poem.
Not only is it a poem, but it's like slam poetry.
It's a slam poem. Yeah. It's a slam poem. It's not kind of slam poetry. It is slam poetry.
Oh my God. It's crazy. It's called Omega. And there's no music. And I don't like to yell at people. I kind of do. I mean, I kind of don't like to goof on somebody trying something new, but like, somebody needed to say something to somebody about this.
I just can't believe this was the closing track.
See, I know that
now there's like a deluxe edition, so there's like 5 songs after it or whatever, but like, the initial release of this album, this is the closing track on this
record. No fucking way, because I listened to the deluxe version where there was like 16 songs or something, and this was just sort of almost in the middle. It felt like in the middle of the album.
No, it's track 13. And so, if you look at the special edition, right? Like, it says Omega, and then all the songs after say bonus track. So Omega is the initial closing.
I think that's on Apple Music. On Spotify, it just says the songs are just there. So I just listen to them all.
Yeah, and the initial album has Omega as the closer.
Fuck me. That is fucking nuts. Do we talk about this a lot on the show, where like, the two most important songs on fucking album, first song, last song.
For
sure.
Rest
of them, whatever. But if the first song sucks or last song sucks, that's a problem. That takes more points off.
Yeah, you need that big closer, especially in this era, this like CD era of music. Like, you needed that iconic closer, right? It's like one thing that Korn did better than almost anybody.
They knew how to
they knew how to close an album. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was smart because it kept, I think, you know, when a band closes an album really well with a really great song, it makes sure that everybody listens to the whole album
100%.
A lot, cuz I mean, pretty much all the Korn albums that I like, I listen to the whole fucking thing. There's nothing I don't like on it. I mean, you know, Follow the Leader, as we talked about.
Yeah, it's got a few, rough songs on there. Yeah,
but like any serious song on there, I'll listen to Seed. I don't give a fuck. You know,
Seed's a good song.
I'll listen to Justin.
Justin's like, also a good song.
That's a banger. Well, I think those are songs that people would say.
No, I think people would say like Cameltosis and All in the Family.
Yeah. But I want.
But yes, I always know what you're saying. That like they're in the back half of the record. That, you know, Pretty, Seed, Justin. Oh, those are all Pretty songs.
Is so good.
I know. To me, those are all good songs. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, you're right. Those are the ones people aren't skipping. You know, Dead Bodies Everywhere or It's On or BBK. But they might skip Seed or Justin or Pretty depending on what they like or not.
I'm gonna walk off this fucking show and listen to that album now because you said Seed, Justin, and Pretty, and now I want to hear them. But yeah, Omega is the funniest song we've ever covered on this show, and I might say that all the time. I might have said that to Dropping Plates, and you know what? Dropping Plates is a very funny song, not as funny as Omega. I implore you to turn this off and go and listen to Omega now if you've never heard it, because you will not believe it when you're listening to it.
I cannot believe how long it is.
I know.
That's the thing. It's like, it's 3 minutes. And I think, you know, we're used to this era where a lot of the songs, not a lot, but there are a lot of songs, not a lot of songs on an album, but a lot of songs in this genre, and there's even one elsewhere on this record, start with like studio sounds or start with like a little skit or some kind of instrumental or whatever. So this song, like on this record, Cold Reader has that going on. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So anyway, that starts with some studio talking or a voicemail. They love their voicemails in this genre of music. But it starts and Corey's doing this poetry thing. And I'm like, okay, this is just the start. And then it'll turn into a song. Yeah. He's doing like 30 seconds off the top. It'll turn into a song. And then I kept waiting for it to turn into a song, and I kept waiting, and it is almost 3 minutes. It is a 2 minute and 52 second long slam poem, which is hilarious.
We all have a little sin that need venting, virtues for the rending, and laws and systems and stems a rift from branches of office. Do you know what your post entails? Do you serve a purpose or purposely serve? Wind down inside your atavistic allure, the value of a summer spent and a winter earned. That is just part of this. The whole thing sounds like that. What a skeletal wreck of a man this is. Translucent flesh and feeble bones. The kind of temple where the whores and villains try to tempt the holistic tomes. Running rampant with free thought to free form in the free and clear. And the matters at hand are shelled out like lint at a laundromat to sift and focus on the bigger, better now. That is
It's so fucking bad, man.
Dude, you know what it is? I'll say this, and he's 5 years older than me. This is some 14-year-old boy shit that wants to be that wants to be an interesting artistic.
Yeah, this is person. Him like proving he's an artiste.
I was like this. I was definitely like, I thought I had something for music that was super, you know, we talked about it at the beginning, but I thought I had something for music that was important, and that sometimes it's like, sometimes it's a song, sometimes it's a poem. But as I said, I was 16. I wasn't almost in my 40s when that happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it just feels like when we talk about power and leverage and stuff like that, it's very obvious. There's no fucking possible way that they thought this was a good song to end the album off. It seems like it, maybe one person thought that or two people thought that. But if I'm in a band, I'm not saying nothing. You know what I mean? Yeah. I know how to shut the fuck up, but I can tell you that I would be trying to figure out in my head how to not have this on the album. Like, how would I say, don't put this on the album? And I think that was probably going through most of the band's heads. How can I ask him nicely to not put this on the album because it sucks really bad? It's not good and it's weird. And unfortunately, I just can't imagine. I can't imagine the other guys in the band that aren't a part of this wanted this on the album, because it is. I'm telling you right now, it's as corny as any. It's so corny. It is so written like a 16-year-old that has a thing where, like, it says atavistic. Like, oh, I'll use the word atavistic in this song. You know what I mean? I'll use tomes, holistic tomes.
It just feels like it just doesn't, even if you wanted to do this, it doesn't fit the genre. Like, to me, the clear sort of parallel to this is Fitter Happier by Radiohead, right? Yeah. From OK Computer. That's sort of the clear, but that's not, number one, that's not Thom Yorke doing a slam poem. That's a robot voice, you know, kind of railing against capitalism. But it's, number one, it's only 40 seconds long. So it's in and out. You barely even notice it, really, or it's like a minute long or whatever it is. So that's number one. But then number two, it's like, that fits Radiohead. Like, Radiohead, I'm buying as like an artiste, as a smart band, you know, someone that I'm expecting to, pardon me, kind of criticize societal structure. I'm not expecting that from the lead singer from Slipknot's side projects album. And I'm definitely not expecting or wanting it in the closing track spot.
Well, at least you can just take the CD out as soon as the song before it's done.
Yes.
Here's another.
How many people listen to Omega more than once? None. How many people even made it all the way through it the first time they listened to it?
It's crazy. Here's another one of the it's so funny. Sanctimonious, pretentious, dastardly bastards with their thumb on the pulse and a finger on the trigger. Classified my ass. That's a fucking secret and you know it. Government is another way to say better than you. It's like ice but no pick, a murder charge that won't stick. It's like the whole other world where you can smell the food but you can't touch the silverware. Whew.
Sanctimonious, I loved pretentious, the ice with bastard. No, I loved the ice with no pick. It's like ice. An ice pick is like probably the like 10th thing I think about when I think of ice. I think of like ice in my drink, hockey ice, just when it snows out, curling ice. Like, it's not like the ice pick is so vital to.
What about this? It's like a guitar, but no pick. You know what I mean?
Tons of people don't use a pick.
Yeah, but it makes more sense than like, it's like ice, but no pick. And by the way, I think everybody that listens to guys know this, but they're actually not called picks. They're called plectrums. So,
right, of course.
Please use the word correctly.
Yes.
Plectrum. But it's just, I cannot believe this is on an album. It is now number one. Over Dropping Plates. It's weirder and way fucking funnier than Dropping Plates. So, and I don't know, John, if you listened to the whole thing after it with Roadhogs.
No, I didn't listen to, I just listened to the album.
So Roadhogs, I got to give you some Roadhogs, dude, because it is, I have to tell you, it is them trying to be funny. And I think you would have really, like, you would have gotten something out of this. I'm on the Stone Sour Roadhogs lyrics right now. Born and raised in this place called life. I got a serious case of the clap. Dirty fingernails, killing and stealing. I'm a bona fide psycho and ready to snap. Yeah. So he sings this like Rob Zombie. And it is about being on the road. Here's verse two. On the highway, I'm sick as shit. It's just the seed is really killing my roids. Motorcycles and a fifth of beam. I'm a double cami chamois with a need to destroy. Yeah. Here's the pre-chorus. Hey, super. Here's the pre-chorus. Hey, super holy shit. Hey, pussy ass and tits. Hey, you can't stop me. Oh, hell no. Hey, big old Mr. Q. Hey, Albuquerque. Come and get me. Yeah, come and get me, man. So.
This guy sounds awesome.
I wish you would have listened to this.
I will after we're done recording.
It would have fucking blown your mind, John. It is the last song on the deluxe version. So
I think too, in one of the articles, that one of the guys gets mad. I think it's Sean, where he says like it's supposed to be called Road Hog and not Road Hogs. And he's like mad about it. And you're like, what? Who cares?
The outro to this song is the Road Hog, baby. Chicken fried double cheese. Put everything on it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy fuck.
It's incredible. It is.
Oh yeah, this is the quote. Okay, about the song Road Hogs, are you ever going to play that live? Haha, you know what pisses me off, and you can set this straight. It's called Road Hog and the label fucked up. The label put that shit on there. It's just Road Hog. Will we ever play it live? Probably not.
I wouldn't play it live. It is not good. So, we can go to the articles, and John, he loves me, so he gave me some guys type stuff.
I gave you some guys stuff because, yeah, there's two old blabbermouth.net articles that somehow in the Wayback Machine or web.archive have the comments still available. So I figured, Brian, that you would be the comment section guy because of guys, but I'll give the people what the articles are about. So one is called, we'll do this one first, Brian. Corey Taylor, I was getting burnt out on Slipknot, August 6th, 2002. He says, Slipknot frontman Corey Taylor has admitted to Rolling Stone magazine that he was really getting burnt out with what he was doing with Slipknot prior to the band's decision to embark on a lengthy hiatus to allow the individual members to pursue side projects. Quote, I needed to get back to where I came from. Melodic singing, more stripped down kind of music, and this was the perfect time to do it. And then it just goes on to talk about the album, and then it finishes off with another great quote. I've been writing stuff like that for years. I just haven't shown the world. This was about branching out and doing a whole different type of music. If I had to go right into another Slipknot album, I wouldn't have been happy. I wouldn't have been able to put my whole heart and soul into it, and it would have sucked. So this was basically me showing the world I can do more than just fucking scream and punch myself in the head. Okay, Brian, hit me with some comments.
These comments are a really good glimpse for younger people of what early internet music fans.
Yes. I couldn't have loved this more when I found this. It's so good.
Comment. Hey, it's nice to see. Posted by Hate 86-2002. 9:48 a.m. The guy actually admit that Slipknot was a huge joke. I don't blame him for doing side projects. Both side projects are far superior to anything Shitknot ever recorded.
Shitknot. And so, had to spell Shitknot with a Y because probably if he spelled it S-H-I-T, the filters would get it.
So I want to say that I don't actually know how these fans are now. You know, like, I wonder if access to the internet, almost like round the clock kind of access to the artists, makes it so it's more parasocial. So you're not just guessing on their lives or what is going on with them and the reason that they're doing it. Right. Like, I don't like this one. You Flakes, posted by Bongwater. at 1:07 p.m. on 8/6/2002. I guess the Slipknot trend is over, so we can all start bashing them now. Music fans are such flakes. You put musicians on a pedestal, then stab them in the back as soon as the fad fades. You have no allegiance to anything. I used to hate Metallica for selling out, but now I'm starting to feel the fans deserved it. I would sell you out too, laughing all the way to the bank. People just suck.
I would love to make money off your back, you fucking losers.
I think I really like him.
Yes.
Because of he seems like a he doesn't seem like the rest of these like he's not guessing. He's sticking up for his favorite band.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a hard one to read, everybody. This is like this is hard to read. Okay, you know what? Fuck all you. Posted by Maggot on 8/6/2011, 4:41 p.m. So he's later on in the day.
Yeah.
From these guys. He goes, you know what? Fuck all of you. Everyone in Slipknot kicks ass. I don't give a shit if Murder Dolls suck. I still like it because Joey's in it. And you little fuck, stop talking shit about Corey. Nothing that he has sung is a bad song. So think about what you're going to say before you do. That feels like a threat.
I like the, yeah, so what if Murder Dolls sucks? It actually rules because Joey's in it.
Here's the second one that I got here from Tin Man. This is 1/30/2003. Hey, my daughter was born 1 year after.
Oh, like, this is from the other article?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So this is this article is also, I mean, it's just a news blurb, but it's very funny. Corey Taylor speaks out on being homeless January 30th, 2003. I guess the song Inhale, which was their third single, talks about this. Corey says, Inhale is about when I was homeless and just kind of roaming around trying to figure everything out. And still at the same time, holding out hope that you can get past something like that. I was a dumb kid. I was all fucked up. I had issues and I made life hell for the people who loved me. I had to get away from them because if I had stayed there, it would have been even worse. It was my own fault, added Taylor about his homeless experience. But I tell you what, you get on the street and it fucking brings you back to reality like that.
God, I love this. Comment, VI syndrome. Vanilla Ice, anyone? So... Vanilla Ice?
Yeah, Vanilla Ice. No, I guess, was he homeless as well? Is that the...
Well, and I go back, or go back by decomposing one, says maybe he needs to go back to the street and wake up.
Loved that. Yeah.
That's really good. And then CC says, seems to me that this guy just likes to hear the sound of his voice. So they are so mad at him.
Yes, this is where they draw the line now. When Stone Sour first came out, they were like, whatever. But this album's been out for a while now, and they're clearly like, fuck you, Corey, Stone Sour shit.
I like this one that makes almost no sense, and you can't tell what the guy's actually saying. Homeless in Iowa? Wow, that's hardcore. Maybe if he was here in Chicago, I'd feel sorry for him. I think, and personally, and
so I'm they're saying like being homeless in Iowa is easier, I guess.
Yeah, and I would disagree with that. I think
I would too. I feel like being homeless in Chicago would be much better than being homeless in Iowa.
Well, I mean, there's more resources there, and I've been to Des Moines. It's not a big city. It's a very, 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 it's one street, basically. They're downtown, and they have a train that runs straight through it. Comment, please. By Tin Man.
This is so good.
What a dumb pussy boy that guy turned into. Put on a mask and shut the fuck up. One more. I gotta read one more. This is from Sour Devil 666.
Yeah, you have to read this one.
This turns into a fight that's gonna go on forever. Something about puppeteers.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Fuck all the people on this post by Sour Devil 666. Look, you dumb motherfucker. This is all caps.
By the way, yeah, all caps. Yeah.
Yeah. Enough is enough. Stop wasting time posting negative shit about Corey. This is Corey, probably.
Yeah.
Corey. Have any of you been homeless? Probably not. Regardless what city you're in, it sucks. Don't you realize some people are interested in the news? The only thing he was saying is that the new song they are releasing for the radio is written about his homeless experience. This would help people who listen to his music understand where the song is coming from. Unlike most of you, he didn't have a daddy or mommy to help him through. So just shut the fuck up and respect that the man had a bad life before he became successful because he has the money in his pocket now and you don't. And I want to go to the puppeteer thing. I got to find him. I like this guy.
Yeah, CC. It's just right below. It's CC. Do you know him? Do you actually know he was homeless? Or are you just being a puppeteer again for the fans to feel bad for him and give him more of your money?
A puppet. He's a puppeteer.
Yes.
Oh, he's fucking manipulating the fans to like. That is a thing that happens a lot now, too, where the way people talk about like podcasts that make decent money, where they're like, oh, everybody's just helping them out. You know what I mean? It's a whole scam. People are paying for something that they like, you know? So that's what the puppeteer thing is. It's like, he says he's homeless, so you're going to buy more of his albums.
Yeah, he clarifies later. He says, I made a mistake on my last post. I meant to say he was being a puppeteer and you were all his puppets. Everyone has had a rough life in one way or another, so he should quit his bitching.
Okay, John, I have to say, being homeless in Iowa and moving all around the country when you're a kid and sometimes sleeping in your car and your parents trying to get a job at Burt Reynolds' house, that seems worse than me growing up, where I kind of lived in the same shitty house and just hung out and didn't really ever have to worry about somewhere. I mean, I've talked about I got kicked out of my house, but I got kicked out of my house and a friend of mine came and picked me up and I stayed at his house for like a year. So people act like that's not homeless because I was in a home, but I just didn't have a lot of my stuff, you
right,
know?
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, I was sleeping on a guy's couch for like a year and, you know, playing with the kid and stuff like that. I think that's when I started hanging with toddlers. Started really loving them. But yeah, I think the way these guys talk is like, that because Corey's life seems tough, I will say.
Oh,
I mean, not
sure.
Now, but obviously not now. He has money, but he also, like, I don't know, he's been working his fucking ass off for like years, and like if people like your thing and they buy it, that's not you manipulating them.
No. And he's just explaining the story. It wasn't like he was trying to, it sounds like he was asked about it and he answered what the song was about. It wasn't like he was like, hey, guess what? I like this one. This really reminded me of 2002 internet or 2003 internet from Sinning Solution. Shut the fuck up, you fucking cunts. And then just names. I love the, like, there's a little insult for everybody. This is like so old school internet. Anarchone, you have no room to talk or no right to talk. That is your friend who knew them, so shut the fuck up, bitch. Oh. CC, you are the fucking puppeteer. I want to take those strings that lead you and wrap them around your fucking neck and squeeze all the air out of your fucking melon. Molotov, what the fuck is it to you if Corey talks about his pastime? Everyone wants to fit in and relate to someone or something just like you. Stamby, you are the sheep. Go to your herd and fuck off. Tin Man, just plain shut the fuck up, you ignorant cock. Decomposing One, your brain is definitely decomposing, so your words mean nothing but shit. Nose T-backs, back the fuck up because you need to step your shit back a few steps. You fucking lifeless bitches, you are as bad as the accusations you're throwing around. Back the fuck up because you need to step your shit back is very funny. Good. Yeah.
I do like this, though. I do want to say CC, or CC Sour Devil 666 goes, hey, CC, so now I'm a puppeteer and wasting my money? By the way, total misunderstanding of the puppeteer thing. Corey's the puppeteer.
Yes.
You know, but he goes like this. Look, man, I did meet him in Baltimore in November. And Corey is a nice guy. Everyone passes jaded judgments on him because he is not metal. I listen to a lot of different types of metal, but the metal that I don't like, I don't talk shit about. Even if they're successful or not, they're musicians and artists. Plus, I'm not a jealous person, so I don't need to pass my superficial judgments like you do. So, it's really funny. Like, the guys in there, and I was telling John this before we recorded, the guys in here, and we can't read all the comments, but the guys in the comments that do say, I met him, I hung out with him, and you fucking know that it was one of those things where in when your first album comes out, maybe your second album comes out, and I did this when I was touring, you'll go out, like, people paid to see you. You'll go out and kind of hang around for a little bit. And
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, meet people and talk to them. And like, that, I did that all the time. You know what I mean? And I assume he did that at when the first album's out, when you're touring on at the beginning of Iowa and stuff like that. He'd go out and kind of hang out with the fans. Everybody in that comment section that says they met him and know him, that's where they met him, and they didn't even talk to him for 1 second.
They don't know him. Yeah.
Oh, and I'll tell you, I used to say I met Stephen Carpenter from the Deftones, but what I did was get his autograph, and he said, "You got anybody got a cigarette?" And I gave him a cigarette, but I was like, "Oh, I gave him a cigarette, bumped cigarette off me."
Yeah.
But I didn't meet him. I don't know him. I don't know shit about him.
He's your close personal friend, Brian.
He's my buddy, man. I gave him a cigarette. So I wanted to read some of these articles. Yeah. There's some stuff. And I want to do, because we had talked about this, taking a step back and looking at the big picture. Corey concludes with, so you could replace somebody in Slipknot? Absolutely. Yeah. Could you recreate what we've done? Absolutely not. Now, I don't think they could recreate what they did. But I think, again, that if they replaced anybody in that band on the next album that they release, nobody would care.
And they have had to replace people because two of them have died. So
Yeah, for real. Yeah. And I was talking to my brother about this because I was telling him we were reviewing Stone Sour, and we were kind of talking about, like, they probably are bringing in Corey Taylor and some of the original people probably are bringing in more money than they were earlier, because I don't think they're paying
guys. They're not giving Jay Weinberg, even though he's also now been kicked out. They're not giving Jay Weinberg the same cut they're getting. That's for sure.
But this line is my favorite thing. And this is him talking about Iowa. And I've heard it a lot. He goes, "It's a crazy place. It's a very psychological place to be." I love it when guys say they have psychology. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, this is, you know what? This is very psychological when you think about it.
Yeah, totally. That was from the Pit article from 2022. The article was called "Corey Taylor Clown Was So Pissed About Stone Sour in the Early Aughts They Didn't Speak for 7 Months." And yeah, I mean, that all that stuff was fun. There's not really a ton of super interesting stuff in there, but I thought that was good.
Metal Rage has a really good part, but it's due to the interviewer.
Yes. So this is the one I've read a little bit from. It's the interview with Sean Economaki from September 19th, 2006. And it's, Sean is the bass player in Stone Sour.
This is such a funny exchange. Okay. So we agree on that. Next question then. What the fuck is 30 divided by 30 minus 50? 150. Oh, I'd love to tell you. I wish I could. But Corey,
that's a Stone Sour song, by the way. This is from the album that came out after this one.
But Corey will kill us. I know what it means. We all know what it means. We just can't say anything because Corey will kill us. I don't even know why he can't say anything. Ha ha ha. Next, the interviewer goes, "Is it sexist or something?"
Yeah, we can't say it because it actually means a lot of slurs.
It's, is this racist? For slurs. Is it about black crime stats?
Yeah, exactly.
It felt like, I love the question though. That's good.
Well, I like the answer too, where he says, "No, it's not sexist and it's not a shotgun shell. It has nothing to do with a firearm. I'll just put it this way. It has to do with Corey's past. That's all I can say. I can't tell you what it means. I've got guys in the crew going, what does it mean? Sorry, can't tell you. Corey wants to sell the answer on eBay in like 30 years. Like anybody will even care then." And he is definitely right. We are 20 years in the future, and I don't think that many people would care about 30 divided by 30 minus 150.
John, okay, the ballads on this new album, don't you think they sound a bit Bon Jovi? No.
Yeah, this guy's interviewing, or this Sean guy sucks. Like, he seems like a terrible interviewer.
Don't you think they sound a bit Bon Jovi? Why would you say that to these? Yeah. You know these guys don't like Bon Jovi. I mean, listen, it kind of does sound like Bon Jovi, that song, Bother. I feel like the ballads do kind of sound like Bon Jovi, but he goes, "Not to be negative or anything, for fuck's sake, Corey is my favorite rock metal vocalist." And then he goes, "Oh, right on. Well, it depends on which one, because I don't think Through the Glass sounds like Bon Jovi." So he was so offended by that.
Oh, super pissed. Yeah. As of course. And I would be too. And then I love that this guy references his own band later on. And then it also leads to a very funny quote from Sean. He asks who Sean likes better, Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone. And then he's talking about him being the Terminator. That he said he prefers Schwarzenegger because he's the Terminator. The interviewer says, "All right, we named our band after that. We're called Model 101. So I ask this question to all the bands I interview. Oh, okay.
I'm a Stallone fan. I was kind of let down that he was more of a Schwarzenegger fan.
And then this was funny too, because he says they're talking about collecting DVDs. And then he says, Corey is pushing past 5,000 DVDs. The interviewer says, that's a lot. And then Sean says, that's a lot of fucking DVDs. We went to a DVD store in the States. We brought in like $10,000 in cash. Corey filled up two shopping carts with DVDs. You should have seen us at the register. We pulled up the carts and they were like, ha ha. They couldn't even give us a receipt. They had to give us a printout like this long. And they were like, you don't have enough. You have to put some of these back. And I'm like, this guy spends $10,000 and you can't knock a couple dollars off. Give me a break. Dig it. That's life.
Oh, dude, that's wild. You bought $10,000 worth of DVDs. That's nuts.
That's nuts, dude.
I'm fucking how to deal with that.
Yeah.
God, these guys. And then I had the Nickelback thing, which I thought was kind of...
It's amazing.
Him and... So Stone Sour, Corey Taylor, and Chad Kroeger are having like this fight in the press in 2017. Now...
From 2002, because there was an article in 2002... where Corey Taylor got really mad that Roadrunner signed Nickelback.
So now I'm going to say Corey Taylor gets fucking dog walked.
Yes, he does. I'll read the quote from Corey and then you can say the Chad stuff. So this is in 2002. Corey said, I'm glad they could use our money to make fucking Nickelback happy. He said, that's a very, very bitter subject for me. And if I ever see any of those fuckers, it's going to be brutal. He continued, I'm happy for them, but at the same time, we went out and busted our asses to make what we did. If they're still here in a couple years, then hey, good for them. But this band isn't going anywhere. And when the record label basically fucks your loyalty in the ass, it's really bitter. Especially when we went out and fucking bled, sweat, and earned every fucking album that we sold. MTV won't fucking touch us. Radio barely fucking touches us. And here comes those fucking pretty boys. And the lead singer looks like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. And what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to not feel bitter when I have broken bones and fucking torn corneas? It's bullshit. And the record label just smiles at you and goes, yeah, yeah, whatever. It's just the fact we could have used the help. We have fought for everything we have fucking made. When is someone going to help us? The record label doesn't do that for us. It'll go to bat for fucking Nickelback. But when it comes to us, it's fucking shut down. Okay. So anyway, go ahead with the Chad Kroeger quote, because it's amazing.
He goes, yeah, because they're trying to be Nickelback. He then took a swig from his beer and directed his comment at the Stone Sour singer. Corey Taylor has said some really nasty things about me before in the press. He talks about how easy it is to write a hit song. Well, show me, write one. I have yet to hear one. They're okay, but they're not as good as Nickelback. They sound like Nickelback light. Kroeger then went on to point out Nickelback and Taylor's other band, Slipknot, launched their respective careers while signed to the same label. He added, they had to put on masks and jump around. How good can your music be if you've got to beat each other up on stage? Throw up in your masks every night? I mean, music shouldn't come with a gimmick. Music should just be music. None of my favorite music comes with a gimmick. And he got tired of sitting behind a mask. He wanted people to know what he really looks like, so he started Stone Sour. Oh man, Corey, don't ever bring up his name again, because he tore you apart.
Chad, baby, I love that. Show me a hit. Chad. Show me one hit. I also love that in 2002, Corey's like, well, if Nickelback's even still around in a couple of years, and it's like, we're here in 2024 and Nickelback still sells out arenas across the world.
Documentary coming out. Yeah, they got a documentary coming out soon.
Yeah. It's also like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to get way in my bag on Nickelback, but like, they do seem like pretty chill and decent guys. Like most people that have met them, like they have a pretty good sense of humor about the music they make. They seem to be like fairly chill guys. So for Chad to actually like get mad and like dog walk you like that is really awesome.
Crazy. I've never seen somebody get owned like that by Chad Kroeger owned you. That is something else. So that was good. Now we got one last article, I think, right?
Well, there's the KNAC one, which is just where Corey also went in on Mushroom Head. It was the same article of Nickelback. So this is from KNAC.com in May 9th, 2002. Slipknot's Corey Taylor blasts Mushroom Head and Nickelback. This is what he said about Mushroom Head. Dude, don't even go there. That fucking band, they couldn't be following us any closer if they were in this fucking band. Those motherfuckers encouraged their fans to pelt us in Cleveland. The first time we ever played there, Paul got hit in the fucking head with a piece of steel the size of my fist. So we went out into the audience and got in a fight, and one of our techs went to jail for it. They want to know why we're pissed at them? Because they started this shit years ago. Now they want to lick their wounds and call it all good? Bullshit. That's not the fucking way this band works, man. I'll fucking go to fucking Cleveland and grab every fucking one of them by their stupid fucking masks, and I will put a knee to their faces until they pass out from loss of blood.
Jesus. Yeah, okay.
I think that's an important one to read before this revolver because, yeah, Corey definitely thinks he's a tough guy.
Mr. Tough Guy. Now he's Mr. Tough Guy, which...
So this is a revolver profile. It's called Corey Taylor Face Off. Whether he'll best be remembered as the masked frontman of Slipknot or the gregarious singer of Stone Sour remains to be seen, but Corey Taylor is sure of one thing. He's never going to let his dark past get the best of him. This is from June 1st, 2007 in Revolver Mag.
So I don't have the story cut out.
Oh, I mean, I'll read it.
Read the story.
This is the single best story we've ever had in the whole history of the show.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of lies. So
Okay. You know. So this says, to a certain segment of the Des Moines, Iowa community where he grew up, Corey Taylor will always be known as Ceiling Fan Guy. The nickname, it seems, stems from a notorious party that took place one memorably debauched weekend back in the mid-90s when Taylor and about 200 other misfit Des Moines teens invaded the mansion of a wealthy friend whose parents were out of town. Already thoroughly wasted on Jägermeister and cheap beer, Taylor found himself propositioned by two girls who invited him upstairs for a menage a trois. So already this is incredible.
Yeah, okay.
Brian, let me set the scene for you, offers Taylor, recalling the incident with obvious relish. We're up in this bedroom. I have two thighs on my face and a girl on my crotch. They're making out and it kicks ass. Life is great, right? All of a sudden, my best friend Denny Harvey and a posse of about 30 guys bum rush the bedroom door. The girls immediately dive under the covers, but me being me, I don't give a fuck. I jump out of bed, take the condom off, and throw it at the crowd. They're all like, ugh. Standing on the bed and sizing up the crowd of uninvited revelers, Taylor decided that the situation called for nothing less than a really grand gesture. I'm going to bounce off the bed and stage dive into the crowd and basically just shove everyone out of the room, he recalls thinking. Unfortunately, in his still inebriated state, Taylor failed to notice the ceiling fan whirring powerfully above the bed. Before you can say Vic Morrow, the fan's hefty blades had smacked him three times across the face, leaving him dazed on the floor with two bloody facial gashes, two black eyes, and a bruise on the tip of his nose. I'm laying on my back going, fuck, what happened? And the whole room is screaming with laughter, he remembers. The thing that sucked was I had to play a show the next day, and most of the people who were there were at the party. The ongoing joke for years afterwards was, oh, Corey, be careful. There's a ceiling fan in here. And I would just go, ah, if you only knew, he laughs, because 2 days later, I finished that threesome.
Cut it out, Corey. cut the fucking malarkey. Who even talks like that still? What year was this article? Do you remember?
2007.
All right. I think we all had stopped talking like that in 2007. What a story, though. Ceiling fan, man. Everybody's goofing on me, man. I'm ceiling fan, man. Like, not a good story. Also, very funny that I beat a bunch of guys' fucking asses naked. I was about to beat like 12 guys' asses naked. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, no, you weren't.
I didn't hit my head on the ceiling fan, I'd have killed those guys, man.
Yeah, it's like the guy that the you're holding me back situation, yes, where yes, your friend holds totally. You back. That's what it was. The ceiling fan was his friend, was holding him back. And then the whole thing about finishing the threesome is like, get out of here, dude.
I mean, all of, I mean, nobody, it's almost certainly a lie. It's almost certainly that he jumped into a ceiling fan once and then he created this entire story around.
Right. I mean, I don't think he jumped into a ceiling fan on a after a three-way. I do not feel that that happened. But no.
You never,
I
don't know.
Fucking know, dude. You never know if he's telling the truth. These guys, I just, the Corey Taylor tough guy thing is really hard for me to deal with. You know, I just, it's so fucking dorky. You know, it doesn't, he doesn't come off like a kick-ass dude. You know what I mean? Especially you listen to this album. Like, it's such a stretch that he's like this huge tough guy that nobody should cross. And then Chad Kroeger, like, just destroys him in a war of insults. Like,
yeah, it's not a good, not good. And then I did love Revolver. This is just at the very end of the article. Revolver went back for the 10-year anniversary of the article and just asked Corey to look back on this cover story and share his thoughts 10 years later. Quote, "I wasn't sure how people were going to take the story, you know, where it was just me on my own, but it seemed like the interest was there. I think that was one of the first times I had done a solo piece that was more about me than anything else. So I was also self-conscious about coming off as that stuffy asshole singer who just wanted to talk about himself." He laughed. "I've never had a problem talking about other shit, but when it comes to talking about things that are Corey-centric, I tend to get a little weird." And I also do not believe you.
No.
You don't go into it being like, "I don't want to come off as a stuffy asshole lead singer, me type," and then be like, "So I was having this threesome and then I almost single-handedly beat up 8 guys naked.
So I was fucking these 2 chicks."
Yeah.
And
and then even saying, like, he's like, "Let me paint the scene for you." It's like, I don't need to know where in the threesome, like, "Oh, this one chick was sitting on my face, this other chick was sitting on my dick, and then these fucking guys rushed." It's like, you could just say, "I was hooking up." Even if you want to brag it was a three-way, fine. Just say, like, "Ah, I'm upstairs with these 2 girls, and then these guys run in," or whatever. We don't need the...
So sick that they allowed him to be like, "Well, that was kind of a embarrassing story for me to tell at that time," and then he didn't.
Yes, totally. They gave him the out to be like, "Yeah, totally. Maybe I shouldn't have said some of that stuff."
Yeah, it's good. I like that part. That was great.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it. That's the Stone Sour album. Before we get on to the back half of this episode, it is time for the tweet defense. If this is your first time listening to the show, this is where we give the album a review. The way we review it is if someone were to tweet at us that this album sucks, it's how many tweets we would do in defense of the album. Brian, we'll start with you. Where are you at?
Again, we're doing a scale of 1 to 10 at this point for me, and I would say 2. And one of the reason would be is that, like, I can't point to a good song, like, that's good all the way through that I like. Now, I will say Omega is the only thing I would tell people to listen to. So if you're saying tweet defense, it's like, I would probably tweet twice to defend it, but one of them would be recommending people listen to Omega. And I know I don't have to come back, because they'll hear it and they'll laugh at it and it'll be very funny to them. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 3. I think I'm kind of the same as you. Like, there's a few good songs, but it's tough to really recommend, like, what this is, like, one great song that you should listen to. But I am also giving them one bonus tweet, because back in the day on MSN Messenger, I used to always have song lyrics as my, like, name. And I absolutely had the bother lines. I wish I had a reason. My flaws are open season. That's my MSN name for, like, way longer than I should
have. Hey, you know,
my flaws are open season, Brian. Everybody hates me, particularly girls. You know, they're all over my flaws. They hate me. And it's really tough for me. If you want to make it less tough for us, you can donate to the show. You can head on over to patreon.com /thepodcast, that's cast with a K, like the band Korn. $4 a month gets you access to 3 bonus episodes every single month. We do 2 singles where we review a single new metal song, and then 1 full-length episode where we review an album. Last month, we had Z from the New Metal Agenda on the show to review Pure by Godflesh. People have really been liking that episode, and particularly liking Z on the episode. He was a great guest to have. So you can check that out. You also get access to our entire back catalog immediately, which at this point is over 130 episodes. So if you're listening to the show and you're like, I need more of this content, head on over there and check it out. You can also donate to have us listen to a particular single or a particular album. So if there's something we haven't covered yet that you're dying for us to get to, head on over to our Patreon, check it out, support the show. We would really appreciate that. Brian, it is now time for the challenge. This is where we give ourselves a kind of fun little task to do based on the record. Last month, for Soulfly's Soulfly, we had to come up with a podcast title that sounds PODcast adjacent, because we both thought that Soulfly was kind of Max trying to capitalize on Sepultura by having a similar band name. You came up with the Nukecast. I came up with the Limp Bizcast. I was the winner in that one. So we are now at 26 wins each and 2 ties. Brian, you came up with the challenge for this month. So what is it, please?
Just a 5 line version of the of Omega. Just your own little 5 line version of the song Omega.
And oh man, I cannot wait for this.
Here we go. I'm gonna do mine. Government, it's a trip, man. A slip and fall, a step into shit. Rip roaring boners, eat the steak. Lock it and load it like nachos. The Senate eats the appetizers.
The Senate eats the appetizers.
Yeah, they eat your loaded nachos, brother. The Senate is eating your loaded nachos.
Okay, that was really good. I like your slam poetry voice too. I'm gonna try to tap in here. Okay. They sang everybody wants to rule the world. Well, the tears for my fears are falling on an empty pillow as I'm swallowed by the deliciously dastardly darkness bringing blackness to the whackness of the world. Is it a genius bar or a bar full of geniuses? Both are equally addicted, so who is really the genius? Shut up! Who cares? Robot. Is that a movie? Is that even fiction? Or is that just the state of society, turning us into capitalist robots, plug us in every morning and turn us off at night? I go to sleep, but how to tell sleep from being awake when everything is a living, breathing nightmare?
I gotta say, we both hit 2 different things, and I love that you did the words atavistic, like that. Yes. Kind of stuff, and I did his like, because he's
terrible metaphors,
right? And he's still trying to be kind of funny. Yeah. In this thing, that's why I said rip roar and boners in it, because he's like, I think he's afraid to go all in. That's why he has the people yelling and stuff like that in the song. I think he's afraid to go fully all in with it. And so he's like, I got to put some levity in it. So,
yeah, no, for sure. I mean, my main thing was he's always doing the like subversion, like what's a pick without ice, or like he has the one where there's one word where he separates, out a word, like that's where I went with like genius bar or a bar full of geniuses. Like he does one where he says, what is it? It's like, it's so stupid, where he does the classic thing where it's like you take a compound word and you kind of like separate the two words out. Let me see here. I'll find it. But that was the one thing I picked out where I was like, oh God, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I'll figure it out while we're doing this other thing. If you want to vote on who won that challenge, by the way, you can head on over to our Twitter, twitter.com/thepod_cast, cast with a K. Also on our Twitter, you can vote in the poll. Again, if it's your first time listening to the show, every month, Brian and I put up 2 albums, and then of those 4 albums, you will decide what we listen to next month. Brian, I'm excited for this one. This is I think it was like he was going for like nature freak. And he's like, forget the freak. You're just nature. That was the one that I really liked. But yeah, anyway, sorry. Brian, you were going to, you talked before the show about your album. So I'm excited to see which two you're putting up in the poll this month. What are they?
We did talk before we recorded. Me and John both said we are addicted now to the bad stuff, I think. I have a theme this month.
Okay.
And that is, we got some right-wing bands.
Oh, okay.
Trapped, self-titled.
Oh, we haven't done that. That would be insane.
Five Finger Death Punch, The Way of the Fist.
Oh, my God. Fuck. Okay, I also went kind of funny. Not a theme between the two, but one of the funniest bonus episodes we ever did was when we watched the Fear Factory behind the scenes documentary. And we have not done one of their albums yet on the show. So I'm putting up Fear Factory's Obsolete. And then I'm also putting up, very famously, Fred Durst got mad at their lead singer, and that voicemail still exists online. I will be putting up Taproot's Welcome.
This is just a killer poll for bad, shitty stuff.
Trapped, Five Finger Death Punch, Fear Factory, and Taproot will be your choices for next month. So again, you can head on over to our Twitter, twitter.com/the POD_cast. The poll usually goes up around the 20th of the month. And then the challenge, you'll have a chance to vote on as well towards the end of the month. And again, if you want to donate to the show, it's patreon.com/the POD cast. It's only $4 a month. You support the show, you get a bunch of bonus content. We'd love to have you over there. We also have an exclusive Discord, merch discounts, all that fun stuff. So head on over there, check it out. And until next month, we'll see you later. Bye.